Hi, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today on Wandering DMs we're going to be talking about how to start as a new DM. Was this a question asked by a viewer, I think? How did we come up with this?
I don't recall how this made it to the list,
yeah.
But it seems like a pretty useful topic and a question I get asked reasonably regularly. I certainly see a lot of players who want to DM but are very nervous about it. And I think it's worth addressing. I don't know. How do you want to jump into this, Dan?
Well, I mean, it's one of these things where initially I was like, well, that seems kind of thin. And then having done a little bit of prep work, I'm like, oh crap, we could go forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
It's a tricky thing. And I think the main thing that occurred to me is, you know, it's different now than when you and I started.
Yeah, for sure.
When you and I started, you know, the rules were fairly thin, and a fairly small number of options. And if I look at the size of the books and the size of the rule set nowadays, I'm like, that is a really interesting dilemma. Yeah. Generationally, because it does seem so much bigger now.
On the other hand, I would say that when you and I started, there was really one choice, which was read the books, get people to show up and play. Right?
Yeah.
Like you had to take the bull by the horns or it just wasn't going to happen.
Yep, yep.
These days, I think there's more opportunity to practice play first. And there's also the whole phenomenon of live streaming, which I think is also a really good input for being a DM. So, in fact, let me jump back here and say sort of here's my step zero stuff, which is probably stuff you're already doing, which is one, play the game. You know, find another game to play in and watch other DMs and figure out, you know, what they do that you like and what they do that you don't like. And, you know, try to play with a bunch of different DMs or watch them live stream. And don't just watch Critical Role, watch other live streams, because there's a lot of ways to play the game. And, you know, Matt Mercer, as good of a DM as he is, his way is not the only way.
Right. It's interesting because I actually don't have a lot of people ask me about becoming a new DM. Hmm. And in fact, I'm usually encouraging people to like run their own game and they resist it. Hmm. And so I asked my partner here as a sample size of one, of like, what makes you hesitant about possibly like running a game? Because she's actually run like board games and actually been really great at that. And her answer is, it seems like an overwhelming amount of, you know, rules to master as far as classes, races, mechanics, spells, monsters, is the first thing I took away. And so on the one hand, you know, having live stream play can be a distinct benefit. I could imagine that also seeming overwhelming. Like when you have professional actors at the table, like Matt Mercer and friends,
right.
I could actually see that being more intimidating rather than less, possibly.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, you're talking essentially the sort of the classic Mercer effect of why is my DM not as good as Matt Mercer? Well, it turns out that he now does this for a living. And so practices it a lot and, you know, works with a bunch of professional actors who are leveraging their acting skills as well.
Right.
That's why I would definitely recommend, you know, don't just watch Critical Role. Watch other streamers. There are lots of other streamers out there. But also, I think, I don't know, I guess I could see that it would be intimidating. I do feel like the claim of, like, a super complicated, there's a lot of rules, I need to know how all these things work. That's sort of the classic barrier for anyone getting into D&D in any way, I think. Right? I think, you know, Wizards to this day battles that of, like, there's probably a lot of people who are aware of D&D, right? Heard about it through Stranger Things or Critical Role or whatever. And they're just like, oh, it seems really complicated.
Right, right. So admittedly, I mean, one solution is get one of the starter sets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I personally got into it. You know, circa 1979. And I, same thing for you. And that was fundamentally a good idea to have a box set that is tailor-made for new players.
Yep.
And obviously, what's it called now? Is it called Essentials or Starter Kit? Or
I think it's Essentials. There was an Essentials Kit, and I know that they're coming out with a whole bunch of new ones. I remember they announced a bunch of new ones at D&D Live. So
okay.
I don't know if those have come out yet or not, but I seem to recall that one is in fact targeted at one DM, one player style play, which is interesting.
Well, you know, so this was, I thought this was a really clever, creative thing that I came up with an hour ago. Is that, that is actually going to be one of my recommendations, actually.
Really, one player.
And, yeah. And, you know, if I think about, so that was actually going to be like my grand finale of like, whoa, what a clever idea Dan came up with. Right? So now
sorry,
here,
Dan.
So it's all downhill from here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but you know, when I started out, the first game that I ran was for one player.
Mm-hmm.
And I think actually probably the first three games for what were like three separate single players. And I think that you said that when you started, you were like playing with just your brother as a DM to get started with.
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
It's hard to qualify what we were playing as actual D&D.
Yeah.
I was so young that I didn't really understand. And so he had some books or papers or something, but there were no dice. We would do it like sitting out in the backyard on the swing set. So it was pretty freeform.
Okay. But I mean, I feel like, you know, that might not be a bad idea of like try a very casual, low key one-on-one with someone that you trust and is halfway interested in. And then you're not trying to manage a whole table of players and a whole table of like pacing issues. And, you know, just to, you know, as an initial step into the process, why not try it with one person and just see how that goes and then try it with two people later on.
Personally, let me give a counterpoint to that. I think...
Okay.
When you have a small number of people, whether it's one or like three, right, maybe even four players, I feel like the pressure is more on the DM. That there's more that the, like, first of all, you're going to get through more content. They're just going to be able to do more things because there's going to be less disagreement. And so there's, and to the DM, and just the number of voices, right? It's 1-to-1 or 1-to-2 or 1-to-3 or whatever it is of number of voices. Your DM's just going to do that much more talking. When you get to a larger group, more of the game is the players talking to each other, with the DM sort of sitting back and waiting for them to figure out what it is they want to do, or, you know, come up with their strategy or what have you. So I almost think that a larger table takes some pressure off, would be my theory.
I can see that, and I like it. I certainly like having a larger table for all those reasons. But I think that... I think you might want to step up to... I think you might want to scaffold your way up to that. You know, and I think that my concept for the one-on-one game is not heavy role play and not heavy character acting capacity, but just like let's get started and see how, if we agree with how the rules are going to work, and see whether the first two fights, you know, are reasonable.
I've personally always found one-on-one, one DM, one player play very awkward. Okay. I feel like it's missing a core component of the game, which is that social aspect of the party collaborating.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I think in like the 3.5 era, I think someone at WotC was like, you know, just run a combat. You know, just have a test run, you know, 30-minute combat and just see how that works
for you. That's actually a super good idea. And in fact, when I was trying to learn the latest edition of Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, when 4th edition came out, and I was trying to figure it out before I was going to run it for anyone, because I was just trying to come to terms with the rules, I actually sat down with four characters I had generated and did a 2-on-2 fight just by myself, just to see how it worked. It was really helpful, actually. It would turn out, and I think I wrote a whole blog post with pictures and stuff of like,
I remember that.
Here's the
blog
of me, you know, doing this silly 2-on-2 fight. So if you're just trying to get a hold of the mechanics, I think that's totally worthwhile. Sure, play by yourself or play with one person and just, you know, figure out how the mechanics of it work. I guess, I'll go back to my original assumption, which was like, most people that come to me with this topic are already players. So they kind of already know the rules.
Okay.
Like, I feel like they maybe don't need that. But if you're really at square one, like, what's D&D? Then, you should do things like this. You should play a quick combat by yourself or with one other person. You should go get yourself, but really, go get yourself invited to someone else's game. Go to a convention and play a game. Like, I don't know. It feels to me a little strange that you're going to jump into the DM seat without ever having been a player.
You know, I'm gonna affirm. I'm gonna give an affirmation of that because that is what I did. That is what I personally did. So
it's what I did too. But I feel like it was out of necessity.
Yeah. Here's a meta comment about this whole thing. When I made my notes to this, I'm surprised by how many of the issues have good arguments in both directions. I'm actually really honestly troubled. By how many really good points there are to go in either direction about small number of players or large number of players or DM first or play first. It's interesting because I feel like any one of these could develop into very different voices for DMing.
Yeah, it's true.
But I think any one of them actually do have possible, like I'm actually troubled by actually giving advice because like any one of these might be reasonable paths, right. Honestly.
Well, let's go down a road where I think we agree, which is the content you should run, which I think use someone else's material. Don't try to sit down and write an adventure.
My number one advice is start small.
Yeah.
Right. Minimize prep time. And basically everything else flows from that. And my number two item was what you just said. I think that running somebody else's adventure is a really good way to get started. That's how I got started, and I was very comfortable with that.
So when you say start small, because this is a thing I was contemplating as well, would you say run a one-shot before you run a campaign?
I think it's a great idea. 100%. That's my advice. Yes. If someone isn't aware, there's an annual competition called the One Page Dungeon Competition, and the entries, I believe, are free online, if I recall correctly. And yes, I would totally that would be my talk recommendation. Get a One Page Dungeon. Try that.
Yep. I totally agree. I love One Page Dungeon as a source. We are biased. Dan is a former One Page Dungeon contest judge. I am a former One Page contest winner. So yes, but you should do it. Check it out. It's great.
It's a good resource. And you know what? I've even come around to it. Originally, I actually resisted the One Page Dungeon format. And over time, I've warmed up to it more and more.
I love it. That's a great source. But also, I would even go so far as to say, again, assuming you took my advice and played a game first or a couple of games, maybe play or try to run an adventure that you've already been a player in.
That's good.
You will be more familiar with the material. You'll sort of know some of the things. You'll have that player mentality. You'll know what the players are thinking when they approach certain stuff, right? You'll just have much more context, and you'll remember how a GM did it or how a DM did it before, and you can, you know, make different choices or the same choices or whatever.
I wouldn't have thought of that. That's a great idea.
Now, you can't always get away with that because maybe it's the same group of players, right? And so they're going to be like, you're going to run the same adventure. Yeah, don't do that. But if you're playing with a different group than you DM for, then play something, run something you've already played.
Now, devil's advocate, right? Devil's advocate on this issue of run a pre-made adventure. Now, that does entail, and actually you running a game that you've already played in actually ameliorates this, but it does entail advanced prep work to read and interpret and become familiar with somebody else's work.
Right.
So, you know, maybe if someone had played in games or had seen streamed games and was comfortable, and if they wanted to write their own dungeon to begin with, maybe they'd be more familiar with that because they developed it, maybe. I don't know. That's not the first thing I did when I started.
Yeah, it's certainly not the way I started.
Right.
I don't know. I think
there actually would be an advantage to not have to interpret somebody else's work, maybe.
Right. Or if you could, again, since streaming is big, maybe you can go watch a stream of somebody running the material. That's maybe harder to track down. A lot of streams are using custom material because why wouldn't they?
But I will say this: when someone goes to write their own dungeon, don't create a campaign world. Right? Don't start off writing Game of Thrones. Don't start off writing a Lord of the Rings style epic story. Just make a place.
In fact,
just make a one-page ruin.
Despite our advice of like start with something small, do a one-shot rather than a campaign. A one-shot can grow into a campaign, right? And I think it's, in fact, the best way to do it, because you started with something very small. You've done this very localized adventure, and then it inevitably asks a bunch of questions. Well, what else is in the world, or what is the outcome of this thing that happened in the adventure? And you can grow and grow and grow your world from there. And I totally agree with Dan on this. Like, rather than trying to create the whole world up front, it's way more enjoyable if the world kind of grows out, right, as you play.
Right. I think that's totally legitimate. And, you know, now, admittedly, I will say that's not what I do. Like, a lot of this advice for new DMs is the opposite of what I personally do. What I personally do might be just bad. but yeah, it totally does work to have like a small, just a place, not even a story, but just a place that's a ruin, that's a dungeon, and the story will self-generate itself once the action starts playing. And I think that classically that's how most campaigns worked, is one small place that began evolving and expanding itself to a larger world. Right. So you might be surprised at how successful that actually is.
So William is pointing out that, like, modern D&D 5th edition way more complex than the stuff that you and I are used to with the old school games, and that maybe that's a big hurdle for players, which I agree. It is, right?
Right.
It totally is. Yep, the game is much more complex than it used to be. Right. You can still play the old stuff. We do. But I know that that's not always a choice, right? Like, sometimes the group of people you've approached are like super into the new stuff and want to play play fifth edition. And so it's reasonable to say maybe play fifth edition.
I will agree with William that one of my, you know, ideas was to consider playing an older edition, maybe, for starters. And just for anybody who's not familiar with it. This is the Tom Moldvay basic D&D that I think was Paul's first set that you had.
Yep.
And it was the second thing that I ran. It's only 64 pages. It has all the basic races, classes, monsters, spells, magic items, treasures you could want. How to create a dungeon. It's only 64 pages. It is on DriveThruRPG. I guess I'll hold it up like this. It is on DriveThruRPG that you can get. It was the top seller when they released it on DriveThruRPG, I think, last year. And now I personally started with the Holmes basic D&D. This is only 48 pages, so even smaller. So you could consider, you know, getting one of the one of the older editions that we still enjoy playing with now.
You could also
think that actually the red Holmes D&D might be the easiest thing to get started with that I ever saw.
Would you suggest looking at modern retro clones? So, for example, there is Labyrinth Lord, which is the modern reinterpretation of exactly that red book you were just showing.
Also a great option, right? Also a great option. Any one of those retro clones, they say. My own, my own original edition Delta, which starts at just like a single sheet. It's a single sheet of paper, actually, is trying to answer that same, how can we minimize the rules for people to get started with, if anybody wants to look at that, original edition Delta.com. Or other OSR retro clones, I think any of those would be good ideas to start with. But I also agree with what you just said, Paul, as far as someone is seeing people play 5th edition and that's what they want to play, then, you know, go ahead and get the 5th edition starter kit.
I might also recommend, let's see, trying to think of like whether you want to use D&D Beyond, you know, do you want to go with electronic tools right out the bat, or do you want to use books and paper. Either way, certainly what I find when I'm running 5th edition these days, I'm always running it with a laptop. And I've got D&D Beyond open. And so one of the nice things there is, because the rules are so dense and I'm so used to many other editions, I don't often know exactly the rule. Rather than page flipping, I can just type in the search bar what I'm looking for, and usually it's pretty good at getting the right result. Okay. Usually. Not
okay.
Always. I will also recommend, recently played with my group, we started a new campaign, and we began with a printed Wizards module called Horde of the Dragon Queen. Now, this is an older 5th edition adventure, and it's kind of known for being pretty railroady. But the very first episode is actually very not railroady, very sandbox kind of. Okay. Your new party arrives into this town just as it's under attack from these terrible forces, and a dragon is flying overhead, and it's very dramatic, and there's a lot of player agency to do stuff. Maybe do what we did, which is just play that first episode and then throw away the book and go a different direction. Yeah. Just, that's how we ran it. It worked really well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that's a modern 5th edition book, I guess I would recommend starting out with. It's a reasonably good adventure.
Interesting.
But also I think that like a lot of the one-page dungeons are written with 5th in mind, so you can certainly run 5th edition there. Okay, so my advice, let me give some more practical advice of DMing 5th edition.
Right.
You are not going to know all the rules for all the classes and all the races. It is not going to happen. I don't know all that stuff. Lean on your players. Let them either make sure they know the stuff, or if they don't, let them look it up. But one of the things I tell my players all the time when I'm running 5th is like, it's your responsibility to know what your character can do, because I don't have the time to read all of it.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because this is something that I wanted to talk about, actually. Devil's advocate,
mm-hmm.
That's problematic.
Yep.
That presents a barrier to entry to new players, of needing to come in and immediately needing to parse rules text and be able to interpret it and talk about it. And at least theoretically, I still have this idea in my mind that a new player ought to be able to sit down and just say, you're a person and you've got armor and you've got a sword. Tell me what you want to do about that.
Oh, for sure. For sure. The funny thing is, it's almost a hindrance now. So I played recently with a brand new player who was like, never played before. And he kept getting drawn into the like, oh, I got to know all the things I can do. And he's like flipping through books and looking in the computer. And I'm like, stop. Just engage with the world.
Right.
Just don't worry about that stuff.
Right.
Consider that the book, the Player's Handbook for 5th Edition, as presented, lists a lot of stuff as optional. Decide that it's not in your game. That's okay. Right?
Right.
Just go with the four original races. Just go with, pick a handful of classes that are okay that you're willing to read through and understand.
Yeah.
And eliminate the others. Either make pre-gen characters for your players so you can just hand them out so you know exactly what they have. Or just tell your players, hey, we're just going to use this subset of stuff because I'm learning and I don't know all the stuff. So help me out.
Yeah, remember that, I mean, when D&D was originally written, there were only four races, including human, and there were only three classes.
Yeah.
So it's 100% legitimate to strip it down to just maybe three races and three classes. Some people even run games where the only race is human. Right. So maybe feel free to just start off with all humans and three class choices. Totally legitimate. And I think that those of us saying consider starting with an older rule set or a retro clone, that's part of the reason we're saying that, actually, is that's already built in. That's already built into the product that you've only got three and three choices there.
Yeah. There's just a lot less stuff for you to be on top of.
Right. Yeah. So the other thing you just brought up was pre-generated PCs, which for me was a question mark. Mm-hmm. So pre-generated PCs, you're not going to spend the time creating characters at the table. You're going to be able to get into the action faster, which I like. It's going to restrict the number of options that people have to juggle before the play starts. Con, it is more preparation work for the starter DM.
Yep. Now, I think the solution to this melds into another aspect, which is even though you are a brand new DM, you are not going to do this in a vacuum. You're going to do it with one or more players. Talk to them. It's okay, right? So like the is character generation an intrinsic part of the game, or are your players brand new and they don't know what they're doing and need help with that part of it? Right. Like it's very, I think the answers to these things are very dependent on the group of people you're playing with. So talk to them and just be forthright with them and make sure they realize like, hey, I've never DM'd before. I'm going to need some help.
Okay. Yeah.
That's my theory on that. Right. Like
fair point.
If you're going to go right. And it not only just who are the players, but I guess like, what is the, context under which you're playing, right? Are you going to a library to run a game for a bunch of middle school kids, right? Like, then you're probably going to need to guide them pretty heavily, and you should take on the responsibility of making the characters and handing them out and knowing how they all work. If you're going to have a bunch of unruly kids who've never played before, and you need to sort of be on top of things. Are you playing with a group of experienced players that you've been playing with forever, and now you're stepping up to be DM, right? Like, then, maybe they have opinions.
So, question.
Yeah.
For the hypothetical new DM, which of those situations would be better if they could choose, right? No, if they could choose or select, would it be better to have newbie players, or would it be better to have expert players at the table?
I almost think it's better to have... I don't want to say expert players, right? If you're playing with a group that group of players who really dig into the rules, that's maybe problematic. But playing with a group who's played before and sort of knows the basics of how it works, I think is good. Better yet, what about a mix? What if you have like one player who's like your
lieutenant? No, it's not an option. Not an option. You can make new players or after players.
Yeah. What's the social dynamic, I guess, right? Like, I don't know. What's your opinion?
Okay, so I'm going to come... I think I'm coming down on the other side of that. Yeah. I actually think it might be more interesting to start off with newbie players that aren't going to be pushing back, that you can't rely on, and that are going to be learning the play at the same time that you learn how to DM as kind of a community, what does this look like for our group thing. So I feel like it actually might be less intimidating for a new DM to play with people that don't have any opinion, and then they have to fill in all those gaps by necessity. I can certainly imagine someone... Like, we know expert players who will push back and debate and argue, and heck, even I've fallen on the wrong side of that myself. And so maybe that would be intimidating to have, if you have four players, what are the chances you've got one who's going to argue with you? I feel like that might be a bad experience for a new DM.
Yeah. I mean, again, it gets into like, what is the social dynamic? And I feel like this is probably a thing that's not in the control of our hypothetical learner here, right? Like, either they have heard of D&D and they have some friends who have also heard in D&D and they'd love to try it out, but nobody knows what the heck they're doing.
Yeah.
Or they're actively playing in a game and the DM is sick or would love somebody else to step up to the plate and run from time to time. And I'm interested. I would try that out, right?
Right.
I think those are...
I feel like this is why the idea of like having like one player might not be bad, of like pick the one player that you trust the most on this issue, or that you're closest to or something like that, and run a skirmish or a battle or a mini game or something like that, and then expand it. Maybe.
Yep. Certainly, I would recommend, though, engage with the players, talk to them about it, right? It's okay to talk to your players about stuff other than the action of playing the game, right? One thing I will say is, like, for example, if you're playing a 3 or 4 hour session, probably somewhere in the middle of there, you're going to like have a bathroom break or something. Right. Probably sometimes it happens. It happens. I almost feel like it happens more at conventions than outside. But
yeah,
anyway,
you're right.
Don't be afraid to take a break in the middle, and don't be afraid during that break to say, to ask your players like, hey, is everyone having fun? What could we do differently to make it more interesting for you?
It's interesting because this is counter to what DMing traditionally has been. Do you agree with that? Like traditionally, the books never talked about getting player buy-in or consensus or session zero. I mean, those didn't exist. Those discussions just didn't exist in the 70s, 80s. And there was sort of an idea that the DM was presenting a mysterious Wizard of Oz, black box to what was going on. Not that I mind the session zero or the getting consent or discussing, but it's an interesting dynamic shift.
I would say
the DM doesn't have to pretend that they know everything.
Right. I mean, does that just grow out, though, of the background where the DM was the creator of the game and they were the only ones who knew anything, right? Like,
Yeah.
And again, I think you can still be mysterious about the world and the context of the game and the actions, but you can also still be a human being who's sitting around a table with other human beings, and you can say, are you having fun? Right? Like, it's a very easy question, and unless your players are total jerks, they're probably going to say yes. But then that's a good, like, you know, introductory statement to then say, like, you know, what do you like? What don't you like? You know, what's... you know, there's different groups of players, I guess, and there's different tastes. Like, some players just want to get in the dungeon and kill monsters and get treasure and just do that all night. Yeah, true. And some players want to role-play the Watch Order because they want to, oh, I'm going to have a private conversation between these two characters. And then these two characters are isolated, and they're going to have a private conversation. You know, different players like different parts of the game, and as DM, I think it's useful to know what your players like.
Some number of years ago, I was watching cable, and there was like a cable show that did just like episodes of like in one teacher's classroom. And so I'm watching this episode in a dance classroom, and I don't dance, and I've never taken a dance class, but the teaching of it was fascinating. And so at some point, the dance instructor has an exercise where half of the class has to carry. Let's just want you, they're paired up, and one person has to just physically carry another person in their arms. Mm-hmm. And the dance instructor goes to the people being carried, you're not sacks of potatoes. You're still, don't just lie there doing nothing. You're not sacks of potatoes. You're still human beings. And then culminates of yelling at the whole class, be human, be humans. So, yeah, that's good advice. That's always stuck with me.
I don't know. I feel like there's... I get asked questions often about, like, how do I deal with this problem at my table? Or how do I deal with this situation? Blah, blah, blah. And my answer always seems to boil down to, like, talk to the players?
Like, you know, that can
outside
be hard.
Of the context of the game, talk to them.
You know, I of course that's the answer. And, you know, that frankly, you saying that rings in my head in a lot of other situations, frankly. And let me be perfectly honest. Right at the moment, I have, there's I shouldn't say this. There's people, I have neighbors in the building who are putting up lots of holiday stuff in the public spaces without asking anybody, right? Mm-hmm. And I should have a conversation with them, and I haven't yet, right? And it's you know, I'm worried about that conversation. So that Paul's advice is correct, but if you're dragging your feet about it, I'm 100% sympathetic with it. That can be a hard thing to do. Hopefully at the game sessions, they're friends and you're comfortable with them. And yes, you should have those conversations.
Right. I mean, these are things I think, like, it's very easy. And I've seen this happen to DMs, new or old, right? That they psych themselves out. They get so nervous about, I got to, you know, make this wonderful experience for my friends. And it's got to be perfect. And so there's just a few, like, mantras I would recommend you say to yourself, right? I'm playing a game with my friends. What you're doing is you're sitting down at a table to play a game with your friends. They're your friends. It's going to be fun. Relax. Right. It doesn't have to be perfect. Probably won't be, right?
Right. Oh, it'll never be perfect. Not only won't be, it absolutely won't ever be perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, on the one hand, practically nothing's perfect. But you're gaming. That actually was one of my bullet points, was exactly that, is like, accept that the game will not be perfect. And that's part of why my top recommendation is minimize the prep work. Get into it, you know, have some fun, accept that this game is half improv and half math or rules. Have a dust up. And then afterwards, make some notes about what you feel like you want to improve on next time.
Right.
And I have been doing this for my entire life, and none of my sessions are perfect. And I always come away with notes about things I want to get better at next time. That's what the process is going to be like.
Yep. Forever. Yeah, absolutely. It's a skill like any skill, and it gets better with practice.
Yeah.
So, you know, your first one's probably going to be a little rough, and that's okay.
Right. So if you're going into a game of charades or Pictionary, don't go, I've got to do the best. I've got to do the perfect game of Pictionary. Right. That's not a thing.
No.
And it won't. There's not a perfect game of D&D either.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I totally agree.
except it's going to be kind of messy, and you're going to be laughing, right? And there'll be screw ups, and you're going to be laughing about it, and that's all part of what happens as well.
Yep,
100%. Yep.
And in another angle of my talk to your players aspect is when it's over, ask for some feedback. What did you think? Was it fun? Did you like it? Did you not like it? How should I change it for another group if I was to run it for another group of players?
Do you do that right at the, you know, that honestly, again, that's another thing that's actually hard for me.
Yeah.
You know, partly when the game has a particular denouement, like I kind of want that aftertaste to, you know, to hang out. And at least right at the table, I tend not to want to transition to a meta conversation as soon as the game gets over.
You're absolutely right.
I want that feeling like when you walk out of a movie to linger longer.
Yeah. Yeah, you're totally right. And it's in fact, as I think about it, like I wouldn't do that as I'm putting my books away.
Okay.
My assumption is that you have social contact with these people beyond the session of the game.
Yeah.
So talk to them afterwards, right? Like, I don't know, when we're at HelgaCon, certainly when we sit down to dinner, we dissect the games we've played, right? Like, that always happens.
Yes.
And I think it's valuable. I think it's really valuable, honestly. Especially, I don't know, I do, a lot of times I will write a new adventure that I will then bring to different locations, right? I play it with groups of friends, I'll play it at different conventions. I'll run the same adventure 4, 5, 6 times.
Yeah.
So as an author, like I'm desperate for feedback. So I'm always pushing on that of like, well, what'd you like? What you didn't like? How should I tweak this? How should I change this? Etc. But I think that feedback loop is also equally valuable just for your GMing technique. But again, I think, I don't know, you got to be in the right place mentally for it. And I think you're right that like the moment after we go and it's over and we start putting our books in our bags and stuff, like that's maybe not the time for it.
Right. I agree. I've had, so currently, like I have 1 or 2 or 3 of my campaign players who will either text or Twitter direct message me like 1 or 2 days later. And that actually might be my favorite way to receive that. That feels really good. So you might tomorrow text me about thoughts you have. I'd like, you know, I'd be interested in that.
Your internet just hitched up on us, so we missed that last sentence.
Having players text or message me a day later might be my favorite way to receive that. Mm-hmm. So you might invite people to do that.
Yeah. I honestly, I think I was posting something about this humorously on Twitter recently of like, I've played plenty of sessions where after we all say our goodbyes, the players all leave and they walk out to their cars and they're standing in my driveway for a good half hour afterwards talking about the game. And it's delightful and it's a little bittersweet because I'm like, I wish I was out there in my driveway talking to those players.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the best. That's the best. In my campaigns currently I actually run games at somebody else's house. And there's a dedicated game space in that apartment building. So we play in one space, get done, come back to their apartment, and have this kind of debrief chatty thing for 30 or 45 minutes where I am in the room actually. And then we actually leave and I come home myself. So it's funny that you mentioned that because I actually do get to hear that. And then I'm in this, and then there's a slightly awkward, like, you know, do I break out of DM mystery mode or do I just, you know, do the sinister laugh while they come up with hypotheses? But I'm delighted to hear that as well.
Yeah. It's easier when, again, if you're in your newbie stage of this is the first game you've ever run, right? Another good reason, I think, to run a one-shot because there is, in theory, no next game. So you can totally pull back the veil and just talk, you know, brass tacks about the game and reveal all the secrets and not have to worry about it.
Great point. Yes, I don't think we explicitly said one-shot session, but that's another great piece of advice. And that's another great reason to do that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Very smart. How much, you know, and keep in mind that it will be a social event, right? It's a party, right? So, you know, have some snacks on hand. Expect to, you know, get into it and out of it in a social manner, of course. How much content do you think someone's going to run into in their first session? Like, how many How many encounters are they going to run through?
Now it really depends on what rules you're running and how big your group is, right?
Yeah.
I think both those things are going to feed into it. If you're playing a 5th edition with a big group, you're going to run 2 or 3 encounters over your 3-hour game. And then I just assumed that your game was 3 hours. Yeah, it's slow. It's a slower game. 5th edition is a slower game.
Okay, so I play in a 5th edition game. I'm not totally ignorant. I am a player in a 5th edition of game for
you're doing more than like 3 or big like fight scenes with everybody doing stuff. What level are
you? Yeah, I mean we've had like 9 players and, you know, maybe 4 or 5 combats
over the course of what? How many hours?
4 hours, 3 or 4 hours.
And what level?
A 2nd, 3rd, 4th.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm running for a group now on Sundays that is 6 players. Okay. They're about 7th level.
Okay.
In terms of like actual big fights, yeah, I'd be surprised to get more than like 3 of those in the 4 hours we play. Now that's not to say that there aren't other. Right? Not every room is a big fight, right? There's little exploration scenes or traps or, you know, rooms that are not full of monsters for them to get through. I don't know. Combat in 5th edition is slow. I don't know how you're racing through it.
I mean, we're in the similar ballpark. I mean, you're saying 3 and I'm saying 5. Maybe our player group is just much better and we win.
I'm going to tell my group you said that.
You know, yeah. Do that.
Excellent. Oh, man.
Because, you know, we're really good.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. For an older... I don't know, there used to be some math, right, for, like, adventure writing, right? When we were talking about, like, you're writing a convention game for 6 players and you're running an old school system, then you're going to need this many rooms. And what was that? You're thinking, like...
Nine
total rooms for 4 hours.
So in the 80s, like with the A series modules, they're dialed right in as you have 9 combat-y encounters. That's a convention that was a tournament situation, and it was like not everybody's going to succeed at getting all through the 9, and that's how you're going to tell who won the tournament.
Yep.
So I feel like, if someone was ballparking 6 or 7, 6, 7, 8, 10 max, that's in that ballpark.
Right. But you're looking through, like, exploration-wise, 2 to 3 rooms per hour.
Yeah.
Which I think
that have combats.
All have combats.
Right.
Okay. I feel like that's my back of the napkin math, not assuming all combats. Like if I'm writing, then I probably want 2 to 3 rooms per hour of game. So let's bump that up to 3. I'm going to write a 4-hour game. That's 12 rooms.
Yeah.
And then I want, and that's like, that's how many I expect them to get through. And so there better be more than that because I don't want anybody to explore the whole thing. Right. I want extra buffer.
I feel like as a first time, so it's that totally reasonable. I feel like as a first time DM, if you were thinking like, I'm probably going to have like 6 major events. And if I have 12 rooms, that's good. And I think the upshot is here, you don't have to design a world or a mega dungeon or 25 or 30 rooms. It could be 10.
Yeah.
10 would be assessed.
I think this is equally applicable if you're not running old school dungeon crawly type stuff. You'd replace the room replace the word room with scene, right? And it totally still works, right?
Right. And now we're not even talking wandering monsters, and we're not talking self-generative systems or things like that or outdoor spoliation or stuff like that. But you probably shouldn't start with that. You should probably start with a limited dungeon probably.
Do you think that a new DM should stick to a straight dungeon crawl versus something that is more plot heavy?
100% yes. Yes. I would stay away from story plotty things. I would have a place. And the dungeon, as has been said by a million people before me, provides a really nice structure for limited choices that the DM can manage easily.
Hmm. So interestingly, the adventure that I was recommending for 5th edition is not a dungeon crawl.
Okay, right, yeah. Right.
It is specifically, although again, it puts you in a very specific situation where you enter a town, that town is under attack. It's super dangerous out there. So now there's just a limited number of things. Like, we're holed up in the castle and we could, like, you know, run over to the temple to try and rescue the priests, or we could run over here to try and gather supplies, or... Right, there's just a limited number of choices of things that you can do that will be useful to the current emergency situation, which I think is pretty dungeon crawl like.
Here's a question, and I find myself doing this more over time. Do you recommend the DM explicitly stating what the primary options are? Like, sometimes I find myself now go like, you've run into some things in the wilderness. You could attack. You could try to talk to them. You could run away. You could immediately surrender or do something I haven't thought of. Is that a good idea for like new DMs, new players to actually like explicitly suggest options?
No, I want to say absolutely never. I would never do that. I would never do any of that.
Really? Okay. All right. Okay.
I might. Really? I can only see myself doing that if a player is stymied, right? Okay. If I'm looking at a player and saying, "What do you want to do?" Okay. And they're like, what can I even do? I don't know. Okay. Then I might go, okay, well, you could attack, or you could, right? And I would still kind of softball it and say like,
okay,
you, like, I don't know. For me, that's the magic of D&D is you can do anything.
Yeah.
Literally.
Right. Anything. I mean, I 100% always end with or something I haven't thought of.
Yeah.
Right. I definitely always do that. But like, I mean, I guess like in original D&D, there's certain rules, mechanics that are hidden in the DM's book, like the evasion rules. So I at least want to at least suggest that, like, maybe, you know, that running away is at least something that we could handle if you wanted to try it. That's interesting.
Yeah. I think even in the case, and I'm going to say, I haven't read it in a while, but if you go back and look at that module that I was recommending, whose name I can already not remember, something about a dragon queen or something. Okay. if you go back and look at it, it probably very distinctly says, like, well, if the players want to do this, here's what happens. If players want to do that, here's what happens. If players want to do blah, here's what goes on. And so you could easily read that and then just regurgitate out to the players. All right, you're trapped in the keep. Do you want to go rescue the priests who are trapped in the temple? Or do you want to go on a supply run? Or do you want to do blah, 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 blah? I don't think that's good DMing, though. I think that what you really want to do is... know what characters you have in your command. So, okay, I've got the Baron of the Keep here. Know what information that character knows and what their motivations are, and then roleplay that character. So when the players say, oh, geez, there's a horrible war out there. What are we going to do? How are we going to survive it? Then maybe you can in his voice start saying like, well, I don't know. We're going to need supplies. We're going to need, you know, more troops. I mean, where the players then, right? They'll just come out in conversation. Right. How do we do that? Where? How are we going to get supplies? Don't you have enough supplies here? Well, no. Unfortunately, there's still a whole bunch of grain down at the mill. Oh, maybe we should go to the mill. Yes, great. That's where we were headed.
Okay. Okay.
But I feel like it's a thing. I would much rather see it come out of player interpretation than come out of like the GM gave you a menu of items.
I mean, of course, that's ideal. Of course, I'm going to agree that's ideal. But I, you know, if people were new players and new DM and they resorted to a little bit of that, I would totally support that as well. If it clarified you starting off as a new DM,
I think it's a fine technique to go to when you realize that you're stymied. Right. If you're talking to a player and they say and they just look bewildered or they are like, I don't know what to do, then I think as DM, certainly like trying to put yourself in their shoes and say like, well, here are some things you could do this or this or this.
Right.
That's a very reasonable technique.
I think I also want to communicate that the game is not just fight.
Yes.
Right? So
yes,
I think I do want to I do want to kind of get in there. I don't want them to like, you know, just fight and then be disappointed that they get beat. Well, so instead of having that lesson come later, I kind of want to step in early and say it's at least an option. There's other stuff you could do than just fight to the death all the time.
And you know what? This is why I like that module that I keep referring to, and I really should go look up its name again so I can stop calling it that module. it is called Horde of the Dragon Queen.
There you go.
What I like about the setup is that it has allied NPCs for you to interact with, right?
Right.
My fear about just doing standard dungeon crawl all the time is that it can very easily devolve into murder at the zoo. I open the door. What's in the door? Hydra. I kill it. Okay, open the next door. What's in the door? Orcs. Okay, I kill them. Right? Like, that's not great. So being in a situation that isn't... I feel like a dungeon crawl is just so much more often that sort of exploration to find monsters to kill them and take their stuff.
Okay.
Whereas like another situation, like I'm trapped in this keep that's under attack. How do I survive? How do I escape?
Right.
There are people around me who are friendly and I can talk to them. It leads you in that direction of having more role play in your game.
Gotcha.
You can still have that stuff in a dungeon crawl. Don't get me wrong. That
yeah.
Absolutely. But you got to work at it a little harder, I think.
A little bit. I mean, the first stab is to, you know, work in factions of competing groups that you can, you know, and hopefully you can communicate to one or both and have them be plotting against.
Every player's instinct to be like, I open the door. There's a bunch of kobolds. Well, let's talk to them. Right. Like,
right. Well, that's why I throw it out. The first couple of times I totally throw it out. You could fight, talk, you know, surrender. You know, comedically or anything else I haven't thought of.
Yeah.
To kind of try to seed their mind of the options that could be on the table.
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, for me, the meat of the dungeon crawl, the fun part of the dungeon crawl is when they start seeing weird, mysterious things and the players fall into that sort of conjecture about what's going on here? What is the backstory that I don't know?
Right.
That I really enjoy. So I would, you know, I like to see dungeons that have that kind of stuff in them that isn't always just goblins who have hidden treasure. There's also, you know, weird writings in the wall on a strange language or
right,
et cetera.
So here's one last question or comment. Like for me, I keep the first page in my personal DM material is a checklist of material that I want to bring to the table so that I don't forget and have to go get more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So like I actually do make a checklist to myself of like about 9 things of have dice, have the dice tray. I do use a DM screen, have the rule book, have the adventure, have paper, have pencils. And have a phone to use as a calculator or photos or something like that. So I would suggest maybe just making a checklist of stuff you're going to bring to the table. And that actually opens up a whole nother conversation that I think you and I are going to have next week at this time of what gear would we recommend that you actually have for your D&D gaming sessions. But let me ask this. Should a new DM use miniatures in a battle map?
If you can get away without it, I'd say no.
Agreed.
Yeah. You might want to have them nearby in case they're necessary. There's certainly plenty of cases where I've had every intention to not use miniatures and not use a battle mat, and the combat goes sideways and weird stuff is happening, and people start really having trouble visualizing where is this and where is that and how does this work and what's the distance from X to Y.
Yeah.
And at some point, like, you're going to be scribbling on a piece of paper behind your screen and realize, like, all right, I should just have a battle mat and some miniatures.
And I mean, you and I both do that is we, you know, on an ad hoc basis, we'll pull out miniatures. I would recommend for new DMs that you stay away from that. It's additional prep work. You know, it might be something that you have to go procure. And so I would say, again, under the, you know, minimize the prep work. Let's just assume that you don't play with miniatures the first time. You know, do it narratively. D&D originally did not have miniatures, right? It comes from miniatures play. But as soon as the original designers were playing D&D, they weren't using miniatures. So it's not essential. And it's something else you've got to go procure, get, have on hand. And I would recommend a new DM really try not doing it with that.
And it's easy to fall in that trap of like, I got to have all the miniatures. So I'm going to go through the whole adventure and read all the monsters and make sure I have proper miniatures for all the monsters. It's easy to fall in that trap. And also I think it can lead to more exciting combats when it's just theater of the mind and you're just imagining what it looks like. Maybe people are more likely to do interesting, unusual things rather than just how many squares do I have? And
right. I agree with that. And of course, William's pointing out to my point about, you know, miniatures are something you got to go procure. William's pointing out that you could have some replacement thing of
just a maybe you know, wrapping paper that has a checkerboard on it and poker chips or Legos or something like that. And if you are going to, you know, so maybe the first time you use miniatures, yeah, do it on a stripped down basis and see if you like it, because it's always optional.
Yep. Yep. For sure. Yeah. Great. Okay, Dan, we have gone a little long. Any final thoughts on new advice for new DMs?
My top thing is make it stripped down. Minimize stuff as much as possible. And if that includes a minimal rule set, if that includes an older or retro rule set, a one-page dungeon, pre-generated PCs, the point is get into the action and get playing as soon as you can. Yep. In any way you possibly can, and it will always be, you know, like an evolution of you learning how to do it better and better. It'll never be perfect, so just embrace how nutty it is.
Yeah, that's my final or my repeated piece of advice is get out of your own head. It's not the end of the world if you don't run a perfect D&D game. Practice is going to improve it, so it's great that you want to do it. So just get in there and do it. I know it's scary. But remember that you're just playing a game with your friends, and it's fun. And just have fun.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? The more goofed up it is, the funnier that'll be afterwards.
Yeah. So if you have any comments, questions as a new DM that you'd like to pose to us, or advice as an old DM that you have for folks who are new, please post it here in the comments section. We'd love to hear from you. And it'd be great to see a little conversation going of DMs helping DMs.
Definitely. And remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us on YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch by the handle Wandering DMs.
Also, our show is available in podcast form in all the places podcasts are available, as well as our own website, wanderingdms.com.
Thanks to our patrons who support this show. And if you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. We are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, so please join us next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.